gospel will overcome. In a world full of sorrow, by evil overrun, where darkness is veiled, the light of the sun.
You're listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. This is your place for intelligent conversation on the relevant issues of our day, each Friday and Saturday at 11:30 and each Sunday at noon. And now, here's the host of The Dean's List, Dr. Paul Dean.
Got a number of items on the list today, the Dean's List, that is. Normally we deal with one topic, but in times past, Christy, we've tried to deal with several things all at once. This is originally why we called it the Dean's List.
Oh, I thought we called it the Dean's List because we're smart.
That's true.
Just kidding, not
yes,
a joke.
Yes, I know. But we're going back to the original format. Don't know if we'll do it every time, but at least for today. So the first item on the list, the millennials, excuse me, got something in my throat. Every time I say millennials, that happens. You're a millennial, right?
I guess so.
Yeah, you are. Maybe that's why it happens. I don't know. You got the baby boom. Well, you got a lot, but I'm a boomer. Then you got the busters, and then the millennials are next. Mm-hmm. You're in that generation. The busters are also called Gen X, the millennials, Gen Y. Right. I don't care about all that. I don't even know why I said it.
I don't know.
But here's a survey. Millennials are turning from religion in double digits. This from Charisma News. According to a new Pew Research Center study, millennials' rating of churches and other religious organizations has dipped, listen to this, 18 percentage points since 2010. 55% now say churches have a positive impact on the country, compared with 5 years ago when nearly three-quarters said that, 73%. So it's gone from 73% to 55% in terms of millennials saying church has a positive impact on the country. Views among older generations have changed little over the same time period. As a result, older generations are now more likely than millennials to view religious organizations positively. So this is a trend among your age group. So I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Is this a case of churches not doing enough to reach millennials? Or is this just more cultural slide that we can't control? Or is there something else wrong with the church?
Well, I don't know if I would say that the church isn't doing enough to reach millennials.
Okay.
I think maybe they're doing too much to try to reach millennials. I know that there are so many churches now are just run by young people my age. And maybe, well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I think a lot of churches are trying to reach the millennials, and some of them are doing a great job. So I don't know if that is the
yes,
answer.
But elaborate on your thought. They're run by people your age.
Well,
because it almost sounded negative. Then it's, well, it's not all bad, but
I would say when you're about. I don't know, when you have a church, I think that the whole body of Christ should be represented, the young and the old.
Okay.
And if it's just a church of young people, then it becomes a place where you can go and hang out and talk with your friends and not actually become edified. And, well, not that your friends are not edifying, but you know what I mean? I think you know what you're trying to say.
So you think we need some hoary-headed wisdom?
I wouldn't put it like that.
That's because you're unfamiliar.
I think I'm young and I'm not smart.
Just so you know.
And I think I need someone older to tell me how to live my life. And if we have a bunch of young people running the church, then we might get caught trapped in our own, you know, thinking and not
youngness.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But I think a reason that young people might be turning away, at least a lot of people that I talk to, would say, oh, I don't go to church because there's too many hypocrites in the church. Or, oh, I don't go to church because, you know, that's antiquated. That's something that my grandparents did. We don't need that now.
Yep.
Or maybe it's just makes us uncomfortable and we think it's weird.
Mm-hmm. But you're saying we need the grandparents. That's what I meant by my comment. White hair is
right.
Those that have wisdom. Now, there are a lot of white-haired folk that don't have a lot of wisdom, and I think that's part of the problem.
Right.
I think there are a lot of churches that aren't focusing on sound doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think millennials would rather hear some truth, or is it like most churches think, well, they just want to be entertained? Or do you think, I mean, there's a group that wants to be entertained, but there's a group hungry for the truth?
I think there's a large group of millennials that are hungry for the truth.
Yeah.
And in fact, I think that's one of our strong suits that we have for our generation, is a lot of us want to know what we believe, but also why we believe it.
Absolutely. Get rid of the silliness.
Mm-hmm.
Bring back the truth. Right? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, entertainment can wear thin after a while. You know, there's no real meaning in entertainment. We're entertained to death in this culture, don't you think? I remember reading a survey not too long ago, and it was on mega churches and how there are more mega churches now, and they're growing in terms of membership, but they're declining in terms of attendance.
Hmm.
So you got more members, less attendees, and it's a significant number. And so that says a lot, that entertainment wears thin. So I think what we need to do is bring back the truth. We need to talk about how the gospel saves, but not only that, how it impacts the everyday world we live in. I don't think we have a lot of that. I don't think we have a lot to do with the doctrine of vocation or social activism. And by that, I mean biblical social activism, not, you know, just liberal social activism.
Mm-hmm.
I think young people are hungry for that because they want a life filled with meaning.
Right.
And that's what we need to give them, because that's what the gospel gives.
Exactly.
All right, we got to move on, or we're never going to make it.
All right, what's next?
As McLaughlin used to say, issue two, Richard Dawkins. Now, you know who Richard Dawkins is. Who is he?
He's an atheist. That's about all I know about him.
Militant atheist. Always, you know, talking bad about God, even though he doesn't believe in him.
Right.
Talking bad about Christians. But you know what he did recently? Begrudgingly, of course. But admitted that Christianity may actually be, listen to this, these are his words, not mine. Well, I mean, I certainly agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what Dawkins said. Christianity may actually be our best defense against aberrant forms of religion that threaten the world.
Now, did he actually
Well, that might be a comment on what he said.
I think that was a comment because
in the notes you have some quotes. That's from Breitbart. All right.
But Dawkins, what did he actually say?
He says there are no Christians, as far as I know, blowing up buildings. I am not aware of any Christian suicide bombers. I'm not aware of any major Christian denomination that believes the penalty for apostasy is death.
Interesting.
Well, it is interesting. It's interesting because it's actually true. And you know, what's happening here? I mean, he's being hit with the reality of worldview. Worldview matters. Worldview makes a difference. Everybody has a worldview. And worldview, your thinking, the way you view the world, is going to drive you to action. And I think what Dawkins is coming up against is that it is the biblical worldview that makes sense out of all reality. It's the biblical worldview that brings peace and stability to this world. No other worldview brings that. All other worldviews bring tyranny or oppression. Survival of the fittest. Might makes right. I mean, we've talked about this before. Chaos. It devolves into different things. But only the biblical worldview brings peace and stability and prosperity for everyone. And Dawkins, of course, I don't know that he would, he wouldn't admit that completely. But he's, and I'm not saying he's going to come to Christ. But at least he's intelligent enough to see the results of these other, as he calls them, aberrant worldviews.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? I mean, he calls these other worldviews aberrant. Aberrant religion. But he's saying the same thing. Does that make sense?
Right. Did Dawkins really say that, or was that the other guy?
Well, again, I don't have the entire article in front of me, but a lot of times people pull words from Dawkins and they distill it. But, you know, whether or not Dawkins used the word, I think he did.
Okay.
But I'd have to go back and double check that. But this is the summation of what he's saying.
Okay.
All right. So I was thinking about this recently. You know, Christians need to be informed. We talked about that. You know, the young people need truth. And we have different ways of teaching truth. But we were looking at the Baptist Catechism that the Charleston Baptist Association put out in 1813.
Mm-hmm.
What in the world? Well, see, this has value. And this is a catechism for all of us, but we were using it with our youngest daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the question. Ought everyone to believe in God? And so we do, you know, we ask the question, she memorizes it, she memorizes the answer, and then she memorizes scripture to go with it. And the answer is, everyone ought to believe in God, and it is their great sin and folly. It is great sin and folly for those who do not. So it's sin not to believe in God, but it's also folly. Think about the word folly. What does it mean?
Foolishness.
Foolishness. Foolish not to believe in God, not only because you go to hell, but because if you don't believe in God, you're not going to have a biblical worldview, and chaos is going to be the result mm-hmm. in one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to live with contradictions and a lack of peace and a lack of stability, and on we could go. And so I was just thinking about those things. Isaiah 44, this is one of those verses that is in the catechism. Thus says the Lord, the King of Israel, and his Redeemer, the Lord of hosts. I am the first and I am the last. Besides me, there is no God. And who can proclaim as I do? Then let him declare it and set it in order for me. Since I appointed the ancient people and the things that are coming and shall come, let them show these. Right? Anyway, he says, I tell you what's going to happen, and it happens. You're my witnesses. Is there a God besides me? Indeed, there is no other rock. I know not one. It's sin and folly not to believe in God. Do you realize that there are a number of things, we sort of bounced all around it, but there's so much that we take for granted in the world and in our culture that you cannot have without God, a biblical view of God.
Hmm.
Can you name one?
Maybe justice.
That's exactly right. Justice. I mean, where does the concept of justice come from if there is no God?
Right.
It's survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest.
It's might makes right. Do what you want. It's hyper-relativism or postmodernism or evolution. Fairness. There's no such thing as fairness. People want to be treated fairly. There's no fair if there is no God, right? I can do what I want. There's no freedom. People talk about freedom of religion or freedom of speech or freedom of expression. There's no freedom apart from God. There's no morality. Well, who says I can't do this, right? You with me?
Mm-hmm.
There's no ethics. There's no right. And here's what's interesting. And this is what Richard Dawkins is worried about. He's worried about terrorism. There's no such thing as terrorism if there is no God. And that's what he's pegged. And he is appealing to a biblical worldview. How deeply he knows that and is aware of that, I do not know. But that's what he's doing. And even the people that want to talk about, you know, microaggressions. Well, how can you be aggressed against in any way if there is no God? How can you be a victim if there is no God? How can you be discriminated against if there is no God? You understand what I'm saying? You don't understand what I'm saying?
Maybe.
Maybe I need to deal with it on the other side of the break. Well, here's the deal. God is the one who says, here's right, here's wrong. If there is no God, if we're just an accident of evolution, where do I get a concept of right and wrong? And who determines what's right and what's wrong?
Right.
You? Me? Dawkins? Trump? Obama? Osama bin Laden? Who? No, that's my point. Everyone does that which is right in his own eyes when there is no God, to quote the Bible. That's why our solution is not government, but gospel. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Why don't we just take by faith what parents have done since the beginning of time and really adhere to basically a biblical worldview that parents are the ones in charge? That's Trace Embry with another answer to Parents Stop Questions. I'm Rich Rosel. Join us for the third program in this series next time on License to Parent.
License the Parent every Monday at 11 a.m. on Christian Talk 660 and 92.9 FM.
If you're over 50 and concerned about any of the following, stay tuned for an exclusive free bottle offer. Are you concerned about your heart health? Are you interested in healthy brain function? What about joint comfort? Well, if you answered yes to any of these questions, we want to send you a free bottle of Krill Omega 50+.
Krill Omega 50 Plus combines krill oil with ultra-pure fish oil in one tiny pill. And it promotes your joint health, your heart health, your arteries, brain function, and even your eye health. Best of all, you can get a free bottle of Krill Omega 50 Plus today. Just pay for shipping and we'll send you a free bottle. Experience the miracle of Krill Omega 50 Plus. Call now for your free bottle. 1-800-340-5763. That's 1-800-340-5763. 1-800-340-5763. Again, call now. 1-800-340-5763.
It was my choice, his choice, their choice, our choice. I felt I had no other choice. Afterward, there was only sorrow and regret. I felt there was no hope. Where could I turn? Who would understand? Then I heard there was a safe place where I could share my grief, guilt, pain, and find recovery. Call Abortion Recovery Assistance of Piedmont Women's Center at 864-244-1434. It is confidential, loving, and supportive.
You're listening to Christian Talk 660.
Hey, I think you had a question. I'm moving on, but I'm not sure you understand where I was coming from.
Well, I was confused. You said if there's no God, there's no such thing as terrorism. So you're saying God causes terrorism?
No, that's not what... Good question! Not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, and I kind of blended the two together. Okay, I start off by saying, okay, no justice, no right, no wrong, no morality. You get that.
Right.
All right, well, what I'm talking about is how people, you know, they want to say, okay, well, that's an act of terrorism. Or that's an act of discrimination. Or you're microaggressing against me, or whatever the case. My point being, you can't call something terrorism if there is no God. See,
okay.
I'm saying even lost people, in order to make their case, and I wasn't clear
so
about
you're
this
saying
because we're
that
out of time.
They understand that there's something wrong with discrimination.
Yes.
How can they understand there's something wrong with discrimination if it's all just survival of the fittest? Because in the animal kingdom, there's no such thing as discrimination. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's part of what I'm saying. And while a lot of things today are called discrimination that should not be,
right?
And while people are up in arms about microaggressions, you know, I'm not worried about people microaggressing against me. You know, somebody assumes I'm a white male or something. Okay, that doesn't bother me. I am
right.
and heterosexual, by the way, proud of it.
Mm-hmm.
monogamous though, proud of that too. Is it monogamous?
Yeah,
thank you. Almost said monotheistic.
Well.
No, my point being, you can't say anything's wrong unless there's a standard of right and wrong.
That's right.
You can't have a standard of right and wrong if there is no God.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah, so here's my point. Richard Dawkins, the only way that Richard Dawkins can say what he said, that Christianity is a bulwark against aberrant religion or whatever he said.
Right.
We can debate that another time. But he's talking about Islamic terrorism, basically what he's talking about. There is no such thing as Islamic terrorism. You have, if there is no God, you have to appeal to a biblical worldview to say they're committing terrorist acts.
I got it.
Make sense? You got it. Let's move on. Speaking of microaggressions and people who are not biblical in their thinking but must appeal to a biblical worldview to even make their argument, the College Fix has come up with an article that I want to cite. Black college students across the country, and everybody's aware of this, they've demanded that they be, now, I don't know if they're aware of this part, but one of their demands, you know, they're making, there's like 76 demands. You can go to, I don't know. This
Demands.org.
Demands.org. Thank you. I couldn't find it in my notes.
TheDemands.org.
The demands. Okay. TheDemands.org. That's right. I have to be accurate because somebody might want to check it out.
Right.
There's like 76 demands, but one of those demands is that they be segregated from white peers. They're calling for safe spaces on campuses meant only for so-called students of color. So you got this website run by the racial advocacy group called the Black Liberation Collective. Not all of the 76 demand list, you know, not every student at every university has all 76 demands, but a lot of the students... Or I guess what I should say is this safe space for persons of color, that's not on, not every campus or every college is making those demands, but a lot of them are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. So like at UCLA, the African Student Union is insisting upon an African diaspora floor.
I don't know what that means.
Well, a floor that's just for them.
Right.
Diaspora means scattered, so I don't know how that works. But anyway, they also want what they call an Afro house.
Interesting.
So, of course, they're claiming that they're being discriminated against, and that's why they want to be segregated.
Okay.
Now, here's my question for you. Are they being discriminated against in an untenable way? And we don't know all the facts.
Maybe.
I don't think so based on what I've heard and read, but you might not have read and heard as much as I.
I don't know. Discrimination still exists.
Sure it does. But I'm just telling you what I've read and heard.
Okay.
These are people who, are saying I've had discussions with folk about microaggressions. Maybe you're not familiar with that and what's going on. You know, for example, if you assume someone's Asian because of the way they look, well, then that's deemed to be sinful or ugly or hurtful or discriminatory.
Right.
And
but a lot of people do make up things in their minds about a black person that might not be.
Oh, of course. And that's not what we're talking about.
Right. I mean, because of their stereotype or their false view. And so they're putting them all in the same category.
Of course. That's what we call bigotry. That's what we call racism.
Right.
That's what we call sinful discrimination. And obviously Christians, more than anyone, you know, we're against those kinds of things. But Christians also ought to be against people who are playing the victim card that really have nothing to be concerned about. Because what it is, it's a self-focus. It's a selfish focus. And you're saying, okay, if you say this or think that or have a different view from me, you know, or don't fall in line. And I don't have a specific example because I wasn't going down this road today. We've talked about it before, and I don't mind going down this road. I'm just saying I don't have a specific example. But there are a lot of folk who can play the victim card, and it's just as sinful as the racist.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're still sinning against God and against others. So that's the point I'm trying to make. Now, the larger point that I want to try to make is, and I think my listeners, and maybe they're not, so maybe I need to do a future show. I've done a couple of broadcasts on this subject. But I think most people are aware that there have been some over-the-top demands that have been made on some of these college campuses. Like, for example, you know, demanding that the president of the university resign simply because he's white and wealthy.
Mm.
Okay, white privilege, that's a crime in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So my question was, and I'll just go ahead and say it rather than put it in the form of a question, I think what we're seeing is a case of philosophical postmodern multiculturalism's natural result. In other words, I said a number of years ago, you know, you're studying postmodernism, I'm talking 20 years ago, and multiculturalism and all the things that are coming from it, and I said, you know what, and a lot of people said this, I'm sure, so I'm not like bragging that I said it, I'm just making a point. Multiculturalism, the idea that you got to hang on to your own culture, and there's nothing wrong with hanging on certain aspects of your own culture, but the way the philosophy was being promulgated was that no one culture is superior to another, you know, worldview, doesn't matter. But I'm in my culture, and I mean, I don't want to be confusing, and apparently I am confusing. Apparently I haven't dealt with this enough in previous broadcasts. The idea is that we're going to stay within our own group, and we're not going to try and even assimilate into other groups. And so we've got gay Americans and transgendered Americans and African Americans and Asian Americans, and we're not all Americans. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying as an American culture. And what we ought to do is have, okay, well, I'm Asian or African or transgendered or whatever, but I'm still going to get along with everybody else in this culture because I still believe in freedom.
People say we're not a melting pot anymore. We're a tossed salad.
Yes, there's a great illustration. Thank you. Well, what this is the fruit of multiculturalism, because multiculturalism does not unite. Multiculturalism divides.
Hmm.
It's the exact opposite of the civil rights movement back in the 60s.
Right.
They weren't calling for segregation back then. They were calling for desegregation. You see, we ought to be able to live. It's like Sly and the Family Stone. We got to live together. That's a Christian sentiment in a civil society. It doesn't mean we have to agree with one another, but it does mean that we have to live together. And the reality is, in terms of total unity, there's only one worldview that unites.
Right.
This is the point. Every other worldview divides. And when you see other worldviews take hold in a culture, that's when the culture divides. But you go to Ephesians chapter 3, for example, and it says the multifaceted or the multicolored wisdom of God is on display, listen to this, by the church. Now, what does that mean? That the church is propagating God's wisdom? Well, it does mean that. That's not the only thing it means.
The church is full of diverse people from different backgrounds, different points of view, but we are all unified in Christ and through the gospel. And
that's right.
And, you know, it's Jews and Gentiles can be together. Colored black people and white people and Asians and everyone can be together and serve God.
That's right. Gospel breaks down all barriers. Socioeconomic, like you said, racial, gender, the whole bit. We're all one in Christ. Now, think about the implications for a gospel in a civil society. Not that everyone in America is a Christian. But think about the whole issue of religious freedom. Think about the whole issue of freedom in general. Flows from a biblical worldview. It's these other worldviews where you don't have freedom. You see, you got all these people that are they're getting in their own little things and they're making rules. They're saying, you know what? If you don't agree with us, then you're somehow anathema. And it goes back to the issue. In ancient civilization, for example, every single society was a sacral society. In other words, the religion was tied to the government somehow, some way. So you had the gods of Babylon, Babylonian culture. You had the Roman pantheon, Roman culture. You know, you could believe what you wanted, but you had to bow down to Caesar, and on we could go. The New Testament vision of culture, the New Testament vision of civil society is the only one that believes in what? Yes, there's the gospel, there's the church, but that's a people within a people. And in terms of a larger civil society, we don't push each other around. We don't oppress. We persuade but not coerce. It's not a sacral society. That's why we believe in separation of church and state. That's why we believe in freedom. And that's what evangelicals have to understand. And that's why we don't try to impose our values on others through the government. And when we do, we're playing into the hands of the multiculturalist, the postmodernist, the evolutionist. Right? So we got to be biblical. Church needs to get busy. We're just as guilty for these culture wars. We've lost our way. We got to think about the gospel and the implications for civil society, right?
Right.
Next time we'll do it again. The Dean's List.
You've been listening to The Dean's List, an analysis of news, culture, and theological trends from a biblical worldview. To access archived broadcasts, go to trueworldview.net, where you'll find other helpful resources as well. Join us each week at 11:30 on Friday and Saturday, and noon on Sunday for The Dean's List.
And the gospel.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.